Thoughts on Teaching by Bobby Ann Starnes. Twisted NCLB or Twisting NCLB. For months, I'd heard the rumors. At first, it was just hushed whispers spoken under cover of darkness in empty hallways, in deserted parking garages, and behind closed doors. I knew something subversive was up, but could only piece together bits of words, parts of sentences, just enough to know that whatever it was had raised hope within the resistance. Then one day, the words were spoken out loud and in public, right in the hallway, right outside my office door. Rushing outside, I hurriedly surveyed the hallway for the men in black suits and sunglasses, or, worse yet, the reading first coaches, coming to take the treasonous citizen into custody. Really? I asked. I thought it was just a legend. It isn't a legend, came the reply. It's real. I've seen it. I asked, it's one of those public-private schools, right? In some suburban community with a really high tax base? Wrong again, my colleague said. It's in a working-class neighborhood with really high mobility rates, single-parent families, and high unemployment rates. Only a few years ago, before they implemented their current plan, the school had only a 60% proficiency rate. Now their fifth graders score 100% proficient. With the glee of a child who triple dog dares you, she added, and they don't use textbooks. Knowing her coup de grace had found its mark, she smiled triumphantly. Have faith, Bobby, she said as she turned to walk away. I stood there speechless. Sure, there are things I don't have to see to believe, things I easily accept on faith, like the sun will come up tomorrow. The earth revolves around the sun, and somewhere just south of Memphis, Elvis is enjoying a fried peanut butter and banana sandwich. But this? No, this I had to see with my own eyes. Soon, feeling like Indiana Jones searching for the Holy Grail, I donned my figurative fedora, climbed into my Jeep, and stealthily headed out in search of my own Holy Grail, a school that operates without fear of No Child Left Behind, NCLB, without reading first programs, without reading coaches who intimidate and browbeat teachers, a school where teachers do not use scripts in their teaching, but instead use their intellect, imagination, and expertise. If it was out there, I would find it, perhaps in Kingsport, Tennessee. Finally arriving at my destination, a city of 34,000 nestled in the southern Appalachian Mountains, I searched for Roosevelt Elementary School. I was sure I would recognize it right away. It would be protected by an alligator-filled moat, an electrified fence, and ominous-looking guards demanding that I state my business. Instead, when I wheeled my Jeep into the parking lot, a beautiful old school building welcomed me. Nice camouflage, I thought, hiding in plain sight. Who would think that such an innocent-looking building could be home to such subversive activity? As I emerged from my Jeep, a man I presumed to be the principal, Dwayne Arnold, slammed the door shut on his minivan. I couldn't help but wonder if it was a specially designed mobile fortress fitted with bulletproof windows and run-flat tires to protect him from the ever-present threat of being apprehended by the NCLB auditors. When Dwayne turned to greet me, his appearance stunned me. I'd expected a haggard, war-worn martyr wearing his battle scars like trophies. Instead, I met a relaxed young man in a crisp white shirt and tie, looking like a, well, like a school principal. Walking toward the building, we talked casually. Everything seemed so normal, too normal. Moments later, after clearing security, he swung open the door and I got my first glimpse of the hallway. Immediately, I knew that everything was not normal, at least not normal for the way most schools operate in 2007. This was clearly a place about and for children. The walls were bright and covered with huge, colorful displays and beautiful, large photographs of the children who live, work, and play in Roosevelt Elementary. This and the lush green plants and the soft gurgling of a small waterfall made me feel immediately connected to the people and place. Later on my tour, I would see the same attention to individuality and commitment to community demonstrated in children's beautifully framed artwork and bulletin boards and displays that reflected the personalities of those who had constructed them. I followed Duane to his office, where I sat spellbound by the stories he told about how the classrooms operate and how decisions are made. Duane explained that the school's instruction is highly individualized, hands-on, and driven by formative assessment. Spelling, reading, writing, and grammar are integrated into the social studies and science curricula. Math grows out of real-world experiences infused in units created using the district's curriculum maps. "How do you get along with the other schools in your district?" I asked, expecting to see signs of rising blood pressure. "What do you mean?" he asked. "Well, surely other schools are opposed to the liberties you take here." He assured me I was wrong, explaining that district principals are very supportive and that Roosevelt's approach is not that different from those used in other Kingsport schools. "In fact," he said, "there's another school, Johnson Elementary, where children work in open space, multi-age classrooms, and teachers use integrated thematic units as the basis of instruction." About that time, we were joined by District Literacy Coordinator Karen Reed Wright. Ironic, eh? Karen's job is supporting the school's integrated literacy-based practices. "There's a lot of professional development," she explained. I envisioned the professional development provided in my own post-NCLB teaching experience, best described as mind-numbing propaganda designed to assure me that some program could be trusted because of its strong, quote, research base, unquote, whatever that means. Instead, Karen described a variety of offerings, ranging from big-picture stuff like visioning to specific instructional strategies. Duane chimed in that staff meetings are used only for professional development, with not a minute wasted on the tedious trivia I'd so often experienced. About then, I felt a sharp pain in my forearm. Looking down, I saw that my arm was covered with bruises and realized I had been pinching myself all morning to test whether what I was hearing was real or just a dream. "So, how do you avoid No Child Left Behind?" I asked. "We don't avoid NCLB. It is the law," Duane said almost impatiently. "Yes, but you aren't doing it," I replied. "Not only are we doing it," he said impatiently this time, "we embrace it. We've made it our own." Karen explained, "It really isn't that hard if you understand the law. The trick is taking it apart and understanding how each part works and learning the research. We really know the research, and we use that research to create child-centered learning environments." "They can do that," she continued, "because we study everything, and then we twist NCLB in ways that make it work for our kids." Twisting NCLB, such a lovely image, I thought. "If it's possible, then why doesn't everyone do it?" I asked. "Fear," Duane said. "Fear stops everything. People can't think when they are fear-struck." After more than 3 hours, it was finally time for my tour. The first stop was the reading resource room. Filled with shelves stuffed with hundreds and hundreds of books, the room was carefully arranged by reading level, subject, and genre into classroom-sized packets. Every design decision facilitated teachers' ability to effectively integrate literature into their instruction. From there, we went into classrooms. As we walked, we met a line of kids heading to lunch. They held their hands out as if to greet Duane. Interrupting our conversation mid-sentence, he slapped a high five on each hand as he passed, and then completed his sentence as though there had been no interruption at all. Finally, in the first classroom, I saw a teacher meeting with a child at a 1950s kitchen table in a cozy little nook. Her open notebook lit by a small reading lamp, she studied the child's individual reading records. "Now, this is a hard story," I heard her say, "but I know you can do it. You're ready to tackle it." As the boy looked down at the hard story, a hint of a smile emerged at the corners of his mouth. I wanted to pull up a chair and join them, but there was so much to see. Moving near the classroom center, I noticed, much to my delight, that there was no front of the classroom and no teacher's desk. Instead, every inch of space was used for maximum effectiveness. There were spaces for children to work alone and in small groups, and a large carpet where the whole class could work together. Just then, I heard a voice above the steady hum of children learning. "Wait, I got it!" Apparently talking to no one but himself, the speaker bent slightly forward, intensified his gaze, and unconsciously curled his tongue out of the corner of his mouth as he fully re-engaged. In classroom after classroom, I witnessed similar events and environments. At the end of the day, I shook Duane's hand, swung open the door, and walked into the sunlight. Smiling to myself, I thought, sleeper cells. All around the country, there are sleeper cells like this one in this unexpected place. And when NCLB is gone, and it will be gone, they will be ready to lead us forward into a way of teaching and learning that makes sense. And what I respected the most about the school was that the staff had found the key to beating the twisted reform that is No Child Left Behind. They had figured it out, taken control of it, and once they understood it, they had twisted NCLB rather than allowing NCLB to twist them and their kids. Wow.